So we'll learn Lilo Nishmas Rivaram. I think I'm adding Makaros sheets so people are gonna have to share. Because we seem to have had a jump in our share numbers. Okay. So I debated what to do this week. What we're going to do is a mix between a very famous position of the Ramban, so we stay with our medieval, since we're still technically medieval period, we're going to do one modern thinker with it. What I picked was some stuff on the importance of Eretz Yisrael. I figure this week we should do something which is some way connected to Yom Ha'atzmaut, Yom HaZikaron, while still sticking with our general theme. We're going to have a few more weeks on the medieval. We're going to, after this, we'll be chareg a little bit from the people who actually wrote systematic philosophy. If you remember, I mentioned earlier that pretty much anyone we've analyzed in the last few weeks was Sephardi, because they were the ones who wrote systematic philosophical treatises and not in Ashkenaz. So we're going to try to... Ashkenaz is going to be harder because they don't write philosophical treatises in the same way. We're going to try to spend 2 weeks, maybe three, on different Ashkenazi thinkers and try to develop, you know, some of their philosophical ideas. Admittedly, it's much harder to piece it together if you didn't think exact or write, at least, in that way. Okay, so we'll start with a very famous Ramban, which, since all of you are affiliated with Bnei Akiva, you've probably heard at some point. I didn't know what Bnei Akiva was until I got to Israel. I still can't say I really have any idea what it is. I'm from New York, sorry. I know outside of New York, it's a thing, but this is the famous sheet of the Ramban about Eretz Yisrael. Okay, so Sefer HaMitzvot of the Rambam, right? The Rambam divides his Sefer HaMitzvot. So he starts with the Shorashim, which are his introductory principles of why and how he counts mitzvot as he does, and then he counts positive mitzvot, negative prohibitions, and then the Ramban writes comments on his Shorashim, and he writes comments on individual mitzvot. In addition, he writes mitzvot, what he called the Shichras Ha'asim, the Shichras Ha'lafim, the commandments that he thinks the Rambam missed or forgot to count in his count that he thinks should be counted. So the Ramban famously includes the mitzvah of what? Yeshiva Eretz Yisrael, right? I assume you've heard this before, yes? Good. So we'll analyze it a little bit. Parts of it you probably won't have heard, but the basics you will, so we can move faster, and then we're going to move to our fellow Yisraeli and get to some modern thinkers. Okay, so this is very famous, right? Mitzvah Reviyash and Itzavenu Loresh is Aret Ashanasan Ha Kelis Barach Vizalel Avosin Lavram Lizakli Yaakov Velo Nazva Biatu Losinu Mina Umos Olish Mama, right? The fourth mitzvah the Rambam didn't count is to inherit the land that God gave to our forefathers and not to leave it either to other nations or to desolation. Vuhu Amru Lahem Varashtem As the pasuk says, you'll inherit the land, you'll dwell in it, because I've given it to you. And it's mentioned many times. Right, we specify the details of the borders. And that teaches us that we shouldn't leave any piece of Eretz Israel. What's the proof that this is a formal mitzvah? In the story of the Meraglim, it says, "Alei Reish, Kasher Diber Hashem Elokechol Echal Tirav Al Techaz." Go up and inherit it. Right, so that's an imperative form. Vamru od of Shalach Hashem Eschem Mikedesh Barnei Lemor Alu Rishuas Aret Shonatzati Lachem Mikasher Lo Avu Laalos B'Ma'amar Hazeh Kasuv V'Tamruas B'Hashem Lo Geichem Lo Amantem Lo V'Lo Shematem Mikolo Harash Aisa Mitzvah Lo Yud V'Haftacha. So this teaches you that it was a mitzvah, it's a command, and not just a destiny or a promise. V'zu he shecham karnos amelchem es mitzvah, and that is why the chacham call this a war or a commanded war. V'chein amru b'gmar sota amru b'yudah melchem es yeshua lechabesh divrei hakol chova melchem es david laharvacha divrei hakol rishus, and that the war of Yeshua according to everyone was an obligation, and David's wars to expand the borders were only allowed, they were volitional. Veloshim Sifrei V'Yarashavta V'Yarashta V'Yashavta Bab Ischoshet Tirash Teshev. In the merit that you inherit it, you will be able to dwell there. Val Tishtabesh, and don't be confused with Tamar Ki Amitva Azos Hiya Mitzvah B'Melchemes Shivas Amim Shinsavul Avdam Shemachrim Dakrimayim. Don't think that the mitzvah is only that original war against the seven nations. It's not true. Sha'anu Nistavinu La'aroga Omodem Ha'hem B'Lechamam Imanu B'Hem Ratzel Ashlim Nashlim Imahem B'Nazom B'Tanayim said there are certain conditions in which we can possibly make deals with them, but the point is we can't leave the land to them. And if you know they had run away, like the in Divrei Hayamim it says that the Girgashi did, and they moved to Africa, we would still have to dwell in it, right? It's not per se the war. If the war was unnecessary, so it wouldn't be a mitzvah. And even after we destroy the nation, and even after we conquer them, we can't then leave, right? So don't think it's only the original war, because first of all, the original war is not necessary if they had just left, and even once we've won that war, we still have to stay. So that tells you that there's a double command. They were commanded to conquer it and to dwell on it. Right? So this is famous, very famous in the Ramban. Definitely, I assume you guys have heard this. Yes? Yes? I don't know if you've read it inside. I don't know if that's a thing. Or you just know that it exists, like you imbibe it in your whatever. Food, air, I don't know. But we're commanded, right? And the Ramban thinks there's a double mitzvah. Right? There are Rishonim who think that there's not. The Ramban thinks it's a double mitzvah. One is to conquer it, that original conquest, and the second is to dwell in it. Right? That is the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Israel. Yes? Now, there are Rishonim, Rav Henkin points this out in Shud B'nei Banim. The Rosh Bash seems to not think quite this way and thinks that maybe the only mitzvah is to dwell in it, right? That the kibush, the conquest, is not its own mitzvah, is not part of the formal mitzvah. It's just a means, it's not actually the mitzvah itself. The Rambam surprisingly does not count the mitzvah at all, and there's a long discussion in the Achronim as to why the Rambam doesn't count the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, right? Very quickly, right? Different answers that are given, right? Some think that the Rambam thinks that it's muvan me'ilav, right? It's not a mitzvah, it's a promise, it's a value. Some think that it's derabbanan. Some think the mitzvah for the Rambam was the original kibush, and therefore it's not a mitzvah ledoros, it's not forever, because once you've conquered it, so you've already fulfilled the mitzvah. Rav Kook thinks it's a mitzvah klalit. It's too general, right? It permeates every other mitzvah, and therefore it can't be counted as a separate mitzvah, right? It's too important to be a mitzvah, which is slightly problematic concerning the fact the Rambam counts belief in God. But, you know, okay, that's not my point. Rav Krishuni points that, Rav Gorin points it out. So he suggests other things. Perhaps, right, Rav Gershuni suggests that perhaps it's not a mitzvah because it's too natural to be a mitzvah, right? It's natural that every people wants a homeland, and we don't, right, just like there's no mitzvah to eat or drink because that's just part of life, so there's no mitzvah to live in Eretz Yisrael. It is who we are. It's not a mitzvah. That's Rav Gershuni. The Achronim suggests a host of different answers to the Rambam. That's, you know, a classic Gemara here in and of itself, and we can leave that aside. But the Ramban is the one who really does count it and has the most expansive formulation of it, that there's a mitzvah both to conquer it and to live in it. Okay? Let's give a few lines. Right here he fleshes out these points. Right, he proves, and then he says, "I reign seven of the kibush called Adaros." Right, he proves the fact that even the kibush continues after that original. Right, even the conquest, the mitzvah of conquest, continues after the original war. let's just assume that that's how he holds. And then he says, "This is one like seven lines up, the like two thirds into the line." This is a mitzvah that the Chachamim spoke about, right? They waxed on about the Hidiras Eretz Israel, and that is living in Israel. Until they said, "Right, to the point where they said,
that anyone who leaves Eretz Yisrael is as if he worships idols. Shenemar ki, and this he quotes from the Midrashim. Kershuna yom miyistabech v'nachlas Hashem lemor leich avod elohim achirim. Vlogos gedolos, and they said many other things. Shamru ba kol him mitzvahs asei azen shenisavinu loreches haaretz v'lasheves ba. Imkain he mitzvahs asei ledaros, and therefore it is a mitzvah forever on the individual. Right, mischayev kol yachid menu afil b'zman agalos, even in galos. And that's the famous Ramban in the Sheikh Chazasan. Okay, you can read the rest, the lines that I skipped. The Ramban famously holds there's a mitzvah, a formal mitzvah to live in Eretz Yisrael. It's something that Chazal also waxed at about, right? There's a clear value statement here. It's not just a mitzvah, it's at many levels the mitzvah, or not the mitzvah, but a very important mitzvah. There are halachic implications to that, to the point where Chazal say things like, right, someone who leaves Eretz Yisrael is like his Ovid Avodah Zarah. Okay, that much you all have probably heard before. Yes? Okay. What does the Ramban actually mean? Right? The Ramban goes much farther. There's a whole theology behind this, right? Of what it means that there's a mitzvah Yishev Eretz Yisrael. What does it mean when we say you go to Chutz Laretz, you're Kilo Ovid Avodah Zarah? What does he mean? Do you know? Have they did this they did teach you or they didn't teach you?
You mean the Nachmanides of it being a mitzvah?
No, not halachically. He has a theological explanation for what this means. Right, you should understand the Ramban. You should understand it's very radical. We'll see it in a moment. Right, the Ramban is not playing games. He means this very seriously. This is not just rhetoric. Right, he has a theological backing for this.
I don't know. Is this answer that I'm guessing? Is this rhetorical or theological? I don't know. But if you go to live in Kutz La'aretz, you're living in lands that are not governed by Jewish people and you're subservient to their rulers.
Yeah, so he has a much more radical, bold theological claim to make. Yes.
Mitzvahs in Chutz La'aretz are only practice.
Yes, he does say that. We'll get to that in a moment. That he thinks mitzvahs in Chutz La'aretz are only practice. We'll get to that in a minute, right?
It seems like you can only have true belief in God in Israel.
Now, why? Right? He has an explanation for this. You don't know, right? You should just know. When people quote the Ramban, you better know the whole thing. Right? It's going to be a little bit scary what we're about to see, but just so you understand what the Ramban's saying, to highlight and right. It's very, it's problematic the extent to which he takes this. You should know that this is what is behind the Ramban, but it'll emphasize what he means on a theological level, right? That Eretz Yisrael is unique, and then we're going to move to Israeli and see some implications of this theological notion. Okay, so this is actually from this week's parsha, so that's nice. Vatitma haaretz ve'efkod avona aleha ve'taki haaretz. Okay. So the Sukkim say that because of the arayos, because of the illicit sexual activity of the nations that were in the land before, the land got fed up and spit them out. Okay? So hechmir akasuv ba'arayos. The Torah was very strict with illicit relationships. Ba'avur ha'aret shetitma behen v'taki ha'nafshot ha'osu. Which is the point where the land spits out arayot. V'nei ha'arayot chovet aguf in tlud ba'aret. So now there's a problem. Right? If you were going to pick a mitzvah that would be uniquely punished in Israel, so what mitzvahs would you pick? Yeah, mitzvahs at Luyas Barat, mitzvahs that are uniquely done in Eretz Yisrael. But that's not the implication of the Pasuk. Right? Something about the Pasuk says that Eretz Yisrael uniquely can handle arayos, can handle illicit relationships. Right? Right? This is Chovas HaGov, you're equally obligated in this everywhere else, right? Right. So we're going to get to in a minute, right? What you noted from the Ramban, a famous sheet of the Ramban, where what he derives from this pasuk is
that the mitzvahs in Kutz La'aretz are practice.
Yeah, that the mitzvahs outside of Israel are only practice, right? That the real key of the mitzvah is only in Eretz Israel, right? He gets that from this pasuk, but we still don't have an explanation. So, right? Great. Okay. Va'inyan, what does it mean? Ki Hashem nechbad barakal. God created the whole world. V'sama koach ha'tachdonim ba'elyonim. V'nasan al kol am v'am bar tosam l'goyim. Kochav u'mazal yadua ka'asher noda ba'etz tagninut. So, how does God run the world? What did I just read?
Where did you read that?
Third line, Ramban, second Ramban. God created everything. Now, what did he do? V'sam koach hatachdonim ba'elyonim. He put power over the lower worlds in the upper worlds. How? V'nasan al kol am ve'am be'artazam l'goyehem. He gave each nation in their land. Kochav u'mazal yadua kasher noda b'hatzegninu. What did he give them? A star, right? He gave them a zodiac. He gave them a star. He gave them powers that control them. As known, hatzegninu, you should guess now, in astrology. Right? In astrology. V'zeu shenemar asher chalak Hashem elokecha osam l'kol ha'amim. Ki chelek chalak l'kulam mazalot b'shamayim. V'gavohim aleihem. Now who's in charge of those respective stars?
Malachei
Elyon. Angels. Nasnam liyos sarim aleihem. Ki inyan shekasuv v'sar malachot paray omeid l'negdi. Uksiv v'nei sar yavan bav. Negrim milachem. Ketaksiv v'razin sar di sham et limalachei pras. Vine Hashem anechbad, hu Elohe Elohim, v'Adonai Adonim l'chol olam. And God, obviously, is in charge of all of them, all those powers, of all Eretz Yisrael, emtza'ud ha'yishuv v'nachlat Hashem miyuchedet lishmo, is God's personal inheritance. Lo nasan aleha min ha'malachim katzin shoter u'moshel. He didn't put an officer or a ruler from the angelic world over Israel. When he gave it to his beloved nation. And that is what it means when it says, you will be my treasure, because I own the whole land. Right? You will be my nation with no other force. And his nation who dwells in his land was commanded in all these prohibited relationships and other mitzvot. And therefore it says, and that's why it says, keep my mitzvahs so the land won't spit you out. Uksiv, amar lochem, atem tishu, azad maschem, v'ani ednena lochem, l'oresh zosa, ani Hashem elokichem, asher evdalti eschem in ha'amim, marki evdil osanu mikol ha'amim. Right? In what sense did God separate us from the other nations? Asher nasan, aliyem, sarim, ve'elohim achirim. That he actually gave them over to other forces. B'sito lanu etz ha'aretz, shi'yehu yisparach lanu le'elohim, v'nechiyat miyuchadim lishmo. And to us he gave the land where he is personally, so to speak, in charge. V'nei ha'aretz shehi nachlas Hashem, anichbad, taki, kol, mitamei osa, v'lo tizbol ovdei avodazar megalim arayot. And therefore he says, next paragraph, right? V'hinei b'chutz la'aretz, therefore in the diaspora, afal pi sha'kol Hashem nechbad, even if you're serving God, ein tara b'ashleima, you can't be pure, ba'avur ha'mishartim ha'moshlim ha'le'av ha'mim to'im acharei sarayhem la'avod gavazan, because there are these forces that are in charge that the other nations are serving. Right? So, right? They probably didn't tell you this. Right? That the Ramban actually has a theological explanation to it. It's not just that he said, oh, Eretz Yisrael is really great. He does. That's true. He actually has a very radical theological explanation for it, which is that God directly... Now, right? The Pasuk clearly says that... Right? The Pesukim clearly emphasize that God personally watches Eretz Yisrael in a way he doesn't watch anywhere else. Right? It's the land asher eini Hashem elokecha bav mereishit hashana ad acharei shana. Right? It's the land where God's eyes on it, so to speak, from the beginning of the year to the end of the year. Right? From meaning the whole year. Right? So at some level it's true, right? You can't deny that Eretz Yisrael is unique, and in some way God's providence is unique in Eretz Yisrael. Right? That's the psukim. Right? The Ramban, right, develops a whole angiology around this, right? A notion that, right, what does that mean? Why is it the case? In what sense is it the case that God has unique providence? It's not just like, oh, God focuses more. It's, no, God, Israel is the only place where God has direct providence.
What's the radical part? The radical part is if you're anywhere in Chutz Laaretz.
Right? Now, so he says, right, in what sense are you Ovid Avodah Zarah? Right? What does it mean you're an idol worshiping Chos Laretz? So, yeah, so for Chazal, right, the simple read, without getting to the theological explanations, what does it mean that you're as if you're worshiping idols in Chos Laretz?
No matter what you do.
It's an expression, right? Like, you're not serving God in the best way. For the Ramban, no. No matter where you live, if you live outside of Eretz Israel, anything you do, there's an intermediary, and therefore you are, at some level, worshiping idols. Because you're not worshiping God, right? This is an extremely radical theological claim, right? And that's why he continues. Let's skip this. Yeah.
Then why does he say that any mitzvot done in Chutz Laretz is practice? It's more like any mitzvot done in Chutz Laretz.
So first he says that it's not right. It's not shlema. And then if you skip down five lines, we'll just get to that piece, and then we'll talk about it. Let's read it. Even though I drive you out of the land, Chutz Laretz, hayu mitzuyanim b'mitzvos. Even though I'm driving you out, be perfected in your mitzvos. Kishe kishe tachziru. Lo you aleichem kadashim. So they won't be new when you get back. Mashal adon shikas al ishto v'shachal beisavia. It's like a husband who gets angry at his wife and sends her to her father's house. Amar la, but said having mitkashet tachshitim, but still dress nicely, right? As if I were there. Shet shachziri lo you aleichem kadashim. Right. So you don't have to remind yourself when you get back what it means to live with your husband. V'chein amar Yirmiyahu atzivi lachat siyunim elu amitzvot Yisrael mitzuyanin. Go ahead. Okay. And even, right, what mitzvah do you even have to practice? Only those that are, devolve on the individual. But those which, and then he goes on, but those which are actually unique to the land, right, you don't even practice in Chutz Laretz. Okay, so this is the Ramban's full perspective of Eretz Israel. Right? Which is that, right? It's not just that Eretz Yisrael is unique, that you have a mitzvah to conquer it, that you have a mitzvah to live in it. But, right, the two big aspects are one, that mitzvahs are only practice, right? Because, for whatever, it seems to be connected to the same theological claim, that God's providence is only directly in Eretz Yisrael. And in other places, there is some medium, right? And, right, it's actually at some level idolatrous to live out of Eretz Yisrael, because, right, there is a medium between you and God, and therefore no matter what you do, right, you are in that orbit of these angelic, you know, intermediaries. So now, right, coming back to your question, so now what? Right?
Yeah, so any mitzvah done
in
Chutz Laretz is a form
of avodah. So at some level, right, that's what he said, right? He said that anything you do is ein tara bashlema. It can't be fully pure.
And there should be an issue of being exactly
outside. Why do they say you shouldn't do them at all instead of doing practice?
Right? Meaning it's, right, he's very careful, right? It's ein tara bashlema, right? You're not actually worshipping avodah zarah, right? You're not actually worshipping these intermediaries. They just are there. Right? So it's not full idol worship. You're still worshiping God. So, ein tara bashlema, right? His language is very careful, right? So it's not pure, right? Because you can't have a direct relationship with God the same way, right? And therefore, there's an element of a desire that sneaks in, and there's a sense in which the mitzvahs don't apply, and that's the full picture, right? That's the full theory of Ramban, right? There's a very radical element to it. That's the full position of Ramban. Yeah, yeah.
It just seems that, like, throughout history, we were given intermediates. For example, in the beginning, we're
right. So that's not intermediate in the same way, right? They're not controlling. Right? The Ramban is going farther and saying, right, that, you know, in outside of Eretz Israel, right, there are actual intermediaries controlling things, right? Not just communicating, but, right, like, God runs the world by having his intermediates run it, right? That's basically what he's saying, right? But that's beyond Nevi'im, right? That's...
They're like godly, you're saying. They're like, not God, but they're like...
Powers. They're powers, right?
But the being are more like just like prophets.
Yeah. They're not powers. Right, they're messengers, right? They're...
But do other Rishonim or really anyone corroborate this view that the Ramban has on the metaphysical nature of the structure of the world?
Yeah. A lot.
Okay, so what he's saying, we can say he's backed...
No, I didn't say that. I said there are thinkers that said this, right? People, the Rambam was very influential, right?
Not these conclusions, but rather the premise of the conclusion that the world is in this way that you have.
No, I'm saying the Rambam is very influential, but right, there are obviously people who think this is, you know, out of bounds, right? But yeah, right. There are significant thinkers and thinkers. Let's talk about it for a second, right? Okay, yeah, Yoni, and then.
But. Like the Ramban is saying that believing you over the Zohar, but his whole opinion is seeming to say that Hashem is giving power to other beings, which in of itself can cause this notion of a Avodah Zohar. Like just the fact that Hashem gives power to other beings, right, could allow people to think, okay, now there's power, so now I can worship. Now there's a deal.
Yeah, sure.
So what's your question?
That's the test of Judaism, though. There's a whole lot of things.
Yeah, meaning, right, the Ramban.
It's clear that Hashem has given power to these.
Yeah, for the Ramban, Avodah Zarah is not because you're, right, for the Ramban, worshipping Avodah Zarah, the problem is that you're worshipping things that don't have power and it's just ridiculous. For the Ramban, it's not. You're worshipping things that do have power, right? That you shouldn't be worshipping. But you're in fact worshipping things that have power, right? Right, that's
not Hashem.
There is not God. Yeah,
it's a big machlokas.
That is a very fundamental machlokas. Yes, this is very, very, very fundamental. Yeah.
Just a question: is this all on the premise that we have conquered Israel? Meaning, the first part of the mitzvah is Vichiv Shua. So, how did the Rambam, how did he reconcile the fact that he wasn't living in Israel?
Same as the Ramban.
Like, he wrote this, but like, was his whole life about Israel? Like, was it?
Yes, right. I mean, yes. That he understood what he was writing when he said it. Yes, right. That it's a Cain of a dessert. Now, right. So now, right. So that's the full sheet of the Ramban, right? It gets a little bit more complicated even, but that's basically the Ramban sheet. Now, let's analyze the issues here for a moment, right? And let's tease out some things from this. Okay. First of all, right. Like I said, one could come to many of the conclusions the Ramban said without accepting this theological system, right? One could analyze this and say, look, there's a mitzvah of Yeshiva Eretz Yisrael, of Kibush and Yeshiva Eretz Yisrael. Eretz Yisrael is actually unique, right? And we can cut out this angel theory thing and just say, look, I don't know what it means, but the Pasuk says that God's providence is stronger in Eretz Yisrael, right? In whatever way that means, right? Maybe, we can reformulate it as follows, right? We could say, in Chutz Laaretz, God works more on Hashgacha Klalit, right? That, right? Hashgacha Klalit, meaning God works through the forces of nature, as opposed to, overriding it, shall we say, right? Overriding nature. And Eretz Yisrael, he acts more directly. The simple reading of the Pasuk, right, is what does it mean that God's eye is on Eretz Yisrael in a more serious way, right? What does that mean in the Pasuk? What's the context?
Rain,
right? In a very, very Pashut Pshat is, right, you could just say, look, it's that God arranged that Eretz Yisrael would be a place where you have to turn to God in a way you don't in other places, right? In America, for example, right, we don't care when it rains. Right? We just don't care. We have water. It rains all year round. And if it doesn't rain, then people maybe stop watering their gardens. Maybe. Or water less. Right? We don't care. In Israel, that's not the case. Right? When it doesn't rain for a few years, right? The news will constantly say, we are reaching the black line. We have lowered the black line in the Kinneret. Right? There is no water. Right? It is a country which is literally dependent on rain. There is no natural source of water that we can really draw on, right? That is fresh, that we can drink. We need rainwater. One could therefore say, look, God arranged it that Eretz Yisrael would be uniquely dependent on God, right? Or in a more obvious sense, shall we say, dependent on God, forcing us to turn to Him. And since people who live in Eretz Yisrael are forced to turn to Him in a way they aren't in other places, mimela, God has a more direct relationship with, right? Because if people pay more attention to God, so then God has a more close relationship, right? There's a host of things that we can do. So The first thing to just put on the table is that you should understand where the Ramban is coming from, but you don't have to go as far as the Ramban, right? You can think that the reason that living in Eretz Yisrael is unique is for actual theological reasons, right? Not just because it's a mitzvah, but there's actually more to it without this whole angelology, right? You could say, right, again, different versions. You could take a mitigated version that for some reason God has more Hashgacha Pratis in Eretz Yisrael and he runs more through the forces of nature, Hashgacha Klalos and Chos Laaretz. Or you could take a totally rationalist position and just take the psukim at face value that God wanted Israel to be in a land where by very nature of the way it's watered and it survives, you have to have a more direct relationship with God because you're more dependent on temporal issues, on rain coming and not, you know, the Nile or the Mississippi or whatever the case may be.
The Yara.
What?
The Yara.
Is that what you have? The what? Yara?
Yara.
Yara.
That? The Yara, sure. Right? But the first thing, so that's point one, is that we can accept this notion that Eretz Yisrael is unique because of an actual unique relationship that God has with people who live in it, right? Without accepting the Ramban's justification for it, right? We'll still sort of send, at some level be true to the Ramban's metastructure, but we should at least recognize, right, that there's what the Ramban says, and then there's the model that he sets up, right? We can take one and, you know, other Rishonim will obviously argue with the specifics that Ramban fills in there, yeah.
Can you accept the idea that mitzvot in Chutz-Aretz, like the practice?
So let's get to that one. Let's hold that one for a second, right? Then we'll come to that, yeah.
Well, is that about the rain? Is that solely like a physical thing? Because you could easily argue that, especially in our times now, and, you know, in the Holocaust, like, we need to turn towards God outside of Israel. There was a huge dependence on God.
I mean, that's true, but that's...
You're talking only physically, like...
Like physically, meaning the land of it... Yeah, like the land.
You're not talking like...
Yeah, like the land. Like, if you know, you're here during a heavy rain season, a bizarre rain season, right? But you've seen the opposite, right? I am sure that there are many crops that were simply destroyed because Israel has such a sensitive rain season that if, like this year, there was random hail 2 weeks after the rain season was supposed to be over, right, it could easily have destroyed, and this happened last year, like the whole cherry crop basically got destroyed because of one late rainstorm, right? There's a chance that happened with this hail, I didn't check, right? So yeah, physically, the country literally does force you to think about God in a more direct way, or think about, right, your own needs in a more direct way. So yeah, obviously there are situations in everybody's life where they turn to God, but Eretz Yisrael as a land is one that always forces you to think that way. Right, too much rain, too late, too little rain, too early, too late are all disastrous for this country. Right. Okay. The second point, right, is that the Ramban, right, has a second point, which is that because of this uniqueness, however we want to parse it, right, Judaism outside of Israel is practice, right? Is not real, or is not as real as it could be, right? Again, that is something that comes with a theological cost, right? Besides for all the theological issues that we raised in the first half, right? It comes with a theological cost, which is, right? Do you really want to claim that? Now, I know it sounds really nice if you want to be all Zionist and say you have to move to Israel, that Judaism isn't meant to be lived in Chutz La'aretz, but the theological cost that comes with it is claiming that Jews for the last whatever many years, right, we can, however you want to draw it, 2,000, 2,500, right, meaning they're clearly, even after Churban Reis Rishon, there were communities who were outside of Eretz Israel, right, meaning, you know, there are some of these Sephardi communities go back and trace their roots in Syria since Shlomo HaMelech, we're talking like 2,700 years, right? Some of them will show you their yichus since Shlomo HaMelech, right? They have documents of it for like, I kid you not, this is very impressive, but they have these documents that go back like scores of generations. I've met people like that. If you talk to Syrians, they'll just tell you that I am descended from David HaMelech. Okay. You know, I can prove it. They even claim that the shul in Syria was built by Yoav ben Tsruya. Like, that is what they claim, right? Like, I kid you not. Like, their community goes back a long time. So whenever you want to draw the line, right, are you willing to say, and I remember, you know, okay, now I get to quote a Rav Aharon story, right? I remember very clearly once someone asking Rav Aharon about this, and he said, right, It is impossible for me to believe that Reb Chaim and the Ramban were not as great as me, right? Because of this theory of the Ramban. Right? At some level, right, you have to realize that that there is a cost to taking, right? While at some level it's clearly true that Eretz Yisrael is unique, right? When you make very strong theological claims, right? It comes at a cost of accusing, right, thousands of generations of Jews of being somewhat idolatrous or only doing practice Judaism. Right? Those are two very, right, you can say, right, modified versions of it. You can say, look, Judaism in its ideal should be lived as a nation state, right? Part of the Torah is mitzvahs atlus baretz. Part of the Torah is political, right? And that just doesn't exist outside of Israel. So at some level, Judaism is not living in its potential. Without going as far as the Ramban and saying even the mitzvah that are not contingent on living in Eretz Yisrael are only practice, right? You don't have to go that far, right? So what I just wanted to put on the table, right, was try to flesh out the Ramban so you actually know what you're talking about when you hear this Ramban being thrown around. Realize that, first of all, there are some theological claims that when you actually see them inside, they're a little bit troubling, which, you know, you should be calm in knowing that, right, you don't have to accept this, and many Rishonim did not accept all the angel stuff and all that, but realize that, therefore, they also didn't take quite as bombastic claims about Eretz Yisrael, right? The Rambam doesn't count Yishuv Eretz Yisrael for whatever reason, but, right, it may partially be influenced by, right, if you don't have the theological background, you are less compelled to make quite as bombastic claims about Eretz Yisrael, right? You can hold it's very, very important, which we obviously do, without going quite that far, as, you know, saying you're an idol worshiper if you're outside of Eretz Yisrael. And the second one is that part of the Ramban's theory is, it sounds very nice that Judaism outside of Eretz Yisrael is practice, but again, that it comes with costs, right? Which, besides for just it comes with costs, I'm not saying it comes with costs so I can choose not to believe it. It's, you have to ask, does it actually sound compelling, right? It's nice to throw around rhetoric, but is it actually compelling, right? Okay, so that's the Ramban that I wanted to put on the table. Yeah, Yoni, and then we don't have that much time. But
just in order to accept that practice, do you have to accept the understanding of the kohod?
Not necessarily, but it definitely helps, right? Right. I think a more likely read of it is that Judaism cannot be lived in its completeness outside of Eretz Israel.
Culture.
I'm saying part of Judaism is that it's a nation state, right? Is that there should be a nation state with a Sanhedrin in it, right? A political state, right? It's clear that part of the Torah is national. Right, it's clear that in Chutz La'aretz we sort of lost that. We live in isolated communities, and in Israel we live as a nation. And part of the Torah is actually dependent on being a nation. Right, so yeah, there are aspects of the Torah that fundamentally change when you don't live. Right, I mean Pesach even looks different in Eretz Israel because it is the national holiday than it does in South Africa. Right. That's just true, right? It's true that at some level, on a practical, on a very rationalist, practical level, that it does transform mitzvot. But you don't have to go as far as Ramban, right? Okay, so I just wanted to put it on the table so you can at least think about it, right? Again, I don't want you to start, you know, getting all worked up about this angel stuff. And it's bothersome. If you like it, that's fine. You should know that many, I don't know most, I can't count numbers, reject, obviously, this whole theological background. Okay, now, what I want to do in the little time that we have left is look at a modern thinker who this is Rav Shaul Yisraeli in the Hakdama to Eretz Chemda, who I think, if we want to take maybe a less extreme view of, and just sort of take a very rational, practical perspective on what it means to say that Eretz Yisrael transforms the way we live Judaism without coming on to this very extreme claim that, right, your idol worshippers outside Pshuto Kamashmo, you really are an idol worshipper and that mitzvah only practice. So I think he has some important things to say. The text that I took is from the Hakdamat Eretz Chemda. Eretz Chemda is his sefer on mitzvahs atluyas baretz, and the mitzvahs that only apply in Eretz Yisrael, Truma, and Maisros, and Shvias, and all that stuff. I mean, this is Hakdama. How did I come across this Hakdama? So Shaul Yisraeli was active in the religious community, let's say, primarily in the 50s through you know, for the next few decades. He at some point was the Rosh Yeshiva of Merkaz HaRav. He founded, if you've heard of it, Machon Eretz Chemda. Heard of it?
No.
Yes. No. To Dayanus Kollel, and other things. What? It's a very prominent Dati Lumi. Dayanus Kollel and Smicha Kollel. He's a very important religious thinker. How did I come across this particular piece? So, I don't know if you've seen it, but you know this, the Koren Yom HaAtzmaut, 900-page machzor. So much of it, as is with many publications in this country, grew out of Alon Shvut, right? The short essays underneath the tefillot are half written by Rabbi Tarragon, and half are translated from the Hebrew version of this by Rabbi Benny Lau. And in the back, there are 250 pages of essays, of long essays, which were in large part chosen by me because the editor-in-chief, Rabbi Ronnie Ziegler, who lives, you know, down near Schreiber, came to the Beis Medrash one day and asked me if I wanted to help compile it. So, right, so he gave me a list of thinkers that he wanted to be included, one of which was Rishali Israeli, so I looked for a while. I decided that I would not take the easy way out and take one of his essays from his book on Yom HaAtzmaut, primarily because they weren't really written as essays, they were more sichot, they were speeches, and they're very hard to, like, they're nice to read, but they're hard to put in a book in translation, they don't translate well. So instead what I took was Eretz Chemda, because I thought it added a different perspective. So if you want a translation of it, it's here. On what page?
You sell the book?
What?
You sell the book?
I don't sell the book. I have nothing to do with it. I there are enough people in here. Look, half it was written by Roy Tarragon. Then I helped compile the essays, and it was the editor-in-chief was Roy Ziegler, and Schreiber's family donated a good part of it, and therefore there's a poem by his grandfather and an introduction by Schreiber here. Right? And so this is very Alon Shvut.
You saw African.
What?
South African as well.
Yeah, that's it.
Pringle family.
Well, there you go, and South African, sure. I didn't know that, but okay. There you go. All these things I didn't know about it. So look, I gave you the whole thing, but I want to give you a slightly different perspective, because what I think I've showed is that, well, people point to the Ramban, right? And the Ramban really is sort of the most articulate Rishon who, you know, sings the praises of Eretz Yisrael. The way he formulates it, there are actually things that many Rishonim disagree with, and intuitively, I think many people are sort of uncomfortable with some of the claims that he actually makes, right? So, or maybe not. I'm uncomfortable with some of the claims he makes, right? I'm glad to know there are many Rishonim who disagree on any level. Yeah, Yanni?
Does the Ramban make his statements on a completely halachic level, or is it hashkafic as well?
I mean, they're both. I mean, this is both a halachic claim and a theological one, right? Right, there are halachic nafkaminas to his position. Right, forget the fact there are obviously halachic nafkaminas to Eretz Yisrael being important. Right, the Gemara says that you're allowed to violate certain isurei derabanan to buy land in Eretz Yisrael. Right, that's, no one can argue about that. The Gemara says that. Right, but there are nafkaminas to the Ramban. For example, the Ramban thinks that even now fighting a war to defend Eretz Yisrael is intrinsically a mitzvah. Right, that not every Rishon agrees with, and that has very serious halachic consequences. Right, so there's halachic implications to his statement. Is there halachic implications to him thinking that mitzvot and chutz la'aretz are practiced? No, because he thinks you still have to keep them. Right. So parts of this are halachic, and parts of them are, you know, very powerful theology. So I just want to quickly present maybe another perspective, Again, remember, keep in mind that this piece is written as the introduction to a halachic work on mitzvahs of Tlulis Baretz. So what he does is, he suggests what I think is a very compelling theory to explain why mitzvahs of Tlulis Baretz, right, Truma and Maaseros and all the mitzvahs that actually are based on the land, are indicative of something bigger. Right? Not in some crazy metaphysical sense, but simply in a practical sense, right, do change the way we live and how we experience Judaism. So we'll skim a little bit, and you know, you can look at the translation here. I didn't do the translation, I just told them what piece to translate, and then they did it. Right, so Baruch Elokeinu Shebaranu L'Chavado V'Dilanu Min HaTam V'Nasanu Toras Emes. So he says, Havdalah Zu Bein Yisrael Amim Shechazal Monim Otsam Bein Havdalah The difference between the Jewish people and the Gentiles is, Chazal compared to the difference between light and darkness, between holiness and profanity or non-holiness. So it's a fundamental distinction which mitpateter b'chol prat u'prat shel sidrei chayim v'pratim haklaliyim, and expresses itself in all parts of life. V'chol zeh gam b'kesher shel ha'am im arzo miyuchedet, and therefore our connection to our land, asher inei Hashem elokecha b'merishit Hashem v'arecha shana, that God pays attention to in a unique way. And say gulon amim is prime Israel peirush tchumen shel right, that uniqueness also expresses itself in our connection to the land. So next paragraph, Kvar Amru Chazal in the Torah, and Chazal had said, Sheikra Torah Yotam Yisrael Baratzo, that the main fulfillment of the Torah is living in his land. Do you want me to read it inside, or should I read? Should we read this inside, or should I read it in English? Will that be easier? Which one?
English.
Vote? English or inside?
Impartial.
Okay. In the original. In English. Okay, people don't care. Okay, so letter. We'll read a little bit inside, and then okay. So Faramur Chazal, Sheikra Torah Yotam Meretz Yisrael Baratzo, right? The main part of the Torah is to live in Israel. Okay. The Gam Mitzvah Aguf, even Mitzvah Aguf, could go and fill in the Mezuzah, Einag, and the Chotar, and the Mechinat, Hatzalat, Siyunim. And even mitzvot which are not totally in the land are still at some level practiced, right? This is the right Ramban, right? Or I mean, it's really from Sifrei, but the Ramban makes the central ulam. But really, but the real uniqueness is not those, but it's the mitzvah atliyud baaretz. Why? She'ein nohegas kol ikar el baaretz Israel, because they only apply in Israel. And mitzvot elam yuadot latzuret mitzvot shel am ke'am chaklai et chay et chayav bechol kateva hachoreish azer v'kotzer v'im kol zot eino mushba me'artot el mashpia Allah. Now this is where I think it's really unique, and he says, what does it mean for a nation to be agricultural and have agricultural commandments? So he said the difference is fundamentally that we aren't only impacted by our natural surroundings, but that we impact it religiously, right? That we have to, right? There is religious significance to how we affect nature. So Eino nefa la'am ha'aretz she'en lo chachma v'chulei. We don't become an am ha'aretz, right? Which is Chazal's contemptuous term for ignoramuses, right? Right. But if you think about the words, it's Amhar, it's people of the land, right? The Eino Nimsa Ella Liushavaret, we just exist in the land. Ella mehave am shebesado, right? Chazal have a different expression, which is also the nation who are in the fields, right? Not the people of the land, but the people who are in the land, who are in the fields. And they are connected to her in tefillah. And even the profane becomes a tool to holiness, and therefore even what you eat is eaten in purity. And now he says, and lo rak l'mimitim atzman bo'olah shel Torah nidna Torah v'mitzvah. And the Torah isn't only given to those who learn Torah. The Torah says, all of you are standing here, right down to the water carriers and the woodcutters. And mitzvot are only given to people who are living, right, business lives, essentially, right, and not, they're not rabbis. Right? La'ovda l'shamra. When we say la'ovda l'shamra from, where's this pasuk? Bereishis, Gan Eden, right? La'ovda. So we classically, right, think about, oh, you know, to work on it religiously. He says, no, when you live in Eretz Yisrael, la'ovda o avoda kipshuta. That means work. U'lishamra shmira kim mashma'a. This is the secret of the true Torah. That it includes all parts of life. And it's not given over only to unique individuals, but transformed the whole nation, right, to a nation of of Kohanim, right, and a holy nation. And then he continues the next paragraph and says that this is the Adifut Zushal Torah Israel, Vadai Shein Mitzad Shoni HaNosim, right, the uniqueness of the Torah that you learn and live in Eretz Israel is not the topics, right, or how you learn it, right, what is it? It's, where's, let's get it, it's, right, I won't read through it, it's long, but it's not just how you learn or what you learn, but the implementation, the fact that it implements itself differently when you have a nation state, right? So, right, you can read the rest yourself, it's fascinating, right? But what does he essentially say, right? He presents a different view and says, well, okay, let me give you a more rational view, right? In what sense, now, he may also accept parts of the Ramban's theological view, I don't know. But in what sense does he say that Eretz Yisrael is really unique? Well, he says it's very simple, right? Let's look at what's clearly unique, Jewishly, about living in Eretz Yisrael, and that is Mitzvah Satlius Bar, Truma, Maaser, Shemitah, all that. But what does that tell us? Right? What does that do? She said, well, think about it. If you live in a place where you don't have mitzvahs that directly relate to your work, right? The best you have is like, you know, be honest at the business place. But like, you're not involved directly in ritual while you're at work. Right? So what does that do? Right? What does it have to do to the way religion is practiced?
That means you have to learn the whole time, because if you work, then you're not going to have...
Well, he doesn't say that, but he says, but who becomes the fundamental, what becomes the paradigmatic expression of a Jew?
Torah.
Right? The Torah scholars. Right?
But not only that, the workers assimilate and loop.
That's the most negative level, right? But even without that, right? Even if they don't assimilate, they're good, fine Jews. In the end of the day, the 80% of their life that they're working is at best a means to spirituality, right? Or a place for them to express their morality. But it's not itself a ritual act, right? So the only people who can be said to be living directly ritual acts at all time is the people who are rabbis and, you know, who are osek in Torah, right? But the second you move to Israel, and especially in agricultural society, right, the average farmer, his whole life is not in some like vague sense, like, oh, he's a moral person and he uses his money to send his kids to Jewish day school and to live a religious life. No, his actual job is itself an expression of Torah, right? This is a mitzvah. So what he argues is that reflects on the uniqueness of Eretz Yisrael in general, right? That the difference in Chutz La'aretz and Eretz Yisrael for him is this, is in Chutz La'aretz, you are doing ritual acts, right, in the context of a secular life. But in a land where the business elements, and you could add to this, the political elements, he does in the next paragraph, right? The fact that there's a mitzvah to conquer it, which mimela means that the army becomes a, right, a mitzvah, right, an expression of a mitzvah, right? It's a mitzvah to settle it. Part of settling it is having a political system that allows you to do it. So politics becomes holy, right? What it does is it transforms fundamentally religion from something which is at its pinnacle only practiced by the, you know, the monks, shall we say, right? To, right, a religion which by its very definition expresses itself in what otherwise would be mundane. And that has an effect even on, let's say, putting on tefillin, right? Because once you're living in this context, everything takes on a new valence, right? In a real way, right? Forget metaphysically, right? Just in a real way, it takes on a different valence when your whole life is actually a ritual act. Yeah.
I'm going to slide around this whole idea. I think it makes sense if it's agricultural society, but in today, where our societies are some, obviously, reliant on agriculture, but largely non-agricultural, even in Israel, people who live and work.
So obviously at some level, right, this works better in an agricultural society, but there are parts of it that are still very true, right? You may not work the field, but you do eat.
You do. So then you got
right? I mean, you see that sign in the Chadarocha, right? You don't have that in Chutz Laretz, right? Where it says, where is everything from? Which of them have Kedushat Shviyat and which of them do not? Right? Which of them are do you have a mitzvah to eat and therefore you can't throw out, and which of them don't you, right? You still eat, right? Right? There are still elements of it, right, that are, yes, you are not working the fields. But
in the workplace, it's not so applicable.
I mean, obviously there are parts of it they're not, and this is always true, right? But the fact that these mitzvot, right, but his point is that the mitzvot set up a system in which normal parts of life and other places are not ritual acts, right? Their only means here become ends, right? Like eating, right? You may not work the field, but we all eat Kedusha Shviyas, which is actually a mitzvah. Right, which it's not in Chutz Laretz. There's very few times besides for Shabbos and Yom Tov maybe where eating is itself a mitzvah. Right, it's not a means to an end, but an end. Right here, right, the whole year of Shemitah is like that.
Yeah.
Right, every time you are about to eat, you have to check. Right, Trumos and Maestros. Right, not just is it not kosher, but did I separate that which I have to separate? Right, did I give of what I need to somebody? Right, what I need to give to somebody else. Right, that's actually part of the process of eating.
And you don't have to do that in Kol. You don't have to...
With the exception of Challah, now.
Challah, and what about Maser? So
Maser Ksafim, right, is a machlokas, whether that's Araisa, Darabban, or a Minhag, with the majority of those, I think it's only a Minhag.
You mean 10% Tzedakah?
Yes, it's only a Minhag.
That's not equivalent of Maser Ani.
Nope, not at all, right? Most posts can follow the Bach.
That's only before, Maser is only before Dira.
Is the what the, is the third, and six, third and sixth, right? Right? But no, what we call Meiser and Chutz Laretz, right, is most poskim think like the Bach, and I think it's Min Reshim Zayin Yardaya, right, that it's only a Minhag. So yes, right, that it's very, very different. You do. We're running out of time, but so to review it, okay, the Ramban, right. What you all know about the Ramban is the Ramban thinks living in Israel is great and unique and all that, right? Now, what you don't realize that comes with that is a few theological points, right, which are at some level extreme, right? One of them is that he actually has this whole system of intermediaries that make it that it's actually somewhat idolatrous to live in Chutz Laretz and that your mitzvahs are practiced. Leaving that aside, one can still take out of him, right, in a very real way, the notion that Eretz Yisrael is unique because God's hashkacha is unique in Eretz Yisrael, either because simply he chooses to that way, or because of the way nature, right, the natural order is here, we have to turn to him more, and therefore, right, implicitly, he therefore is more directly involved with us, right? So it's not just that it's a great place to live, but actually affects our relationship with God in a fundamental way. That's point one that you should remember from the Ramban. The second one, right, is he takes the very extreme that mitzvot are only practice. Now again, he has that whole theological system behind it. But one can take, right, but that comes with costs, right? But we can reformulate it and say, okay, maybe I'm not ready to say what the Ramban said. I don't think it's right that people were only practicing Judaism, but I can still understand that there's something unique about religious life in Israel that actually transforms everything we do. And that's where I think Rav Israeli is very helpful, where he says, right, the reason he thinks Torah is unique in Eretz Israel is because what mitzvahs at Tlis Baretz show you or open up to you is a life where the mundane is actually directly ritual. It's not just a means to a ritual end, but it's itself ritual. And once you live in a country where eating and drinking and working without much effort become ritual, it transforms how you think because it changes religion from being something which is primarily ritual, shall we say, right, or viewed that way, to something which, right, is fundamentally about sanctifying the profane. Right now, while that's an idea we talk about in Chutz Laretz, in Eretz Yisrael, that's actually built into the fabric of the halachic system and how it expresses itself in Eretz Yisrael. So those are some things to think about as we enter Yom HaTzmaut, and to realize what the Ramban is really saying and how, you know, versions of the Ramban or toned down versions of the Ramban, right, express themselves in interesting and important ways, but, you know, not get carried away with, right? It's important to always look back at the originals and try to think where things actually come from before we just throw it around. Okay.